and welcome to the Popcorn Junkies. What's that?
I thought that was supposed to be Napoleon.
I was trying to do the drummers.
I thought you were, but it didn't sound like drums.
It didn't, did it? It sounded like fart. Imagine being a drummer whilst you're being shot at, and your mission, you're told by your commander to just drum. You'd be like, fuck that shit, I want to get out of it. You've signed yourself over to being shot because you can't even defend yourself.
No, but you're proud of beating the drum for England or France or Russia or any of the other countries you've just been round.
Okay, so this is a review of Napoleon, Ridley Scott's historical epic.
Yes, and epic is the right word.
And I was wrong, Mum. I said he was 80, but he's 85.
Oh, wow, that is getting
on a bit. He's doing it. He's trotting them out. And he said rather sort of competitively, I love this. It's a bit like our Nanny Thelma when she gets competitive about being she died on her street. Yeah. She's like, is he still going? Oh, all right, he's gone. Oh, he's gone, all right.
She used to love it.
He said rather sort of cockily, well, it's taken, and all the time it's taken Scorsese to make Killers of the Flower Moon, I've made four films. All right, Ridley.
Yes.
Jesus
Somebody
Christ.
Somebody should have said to him, yes, Ridley, but it's Killers of the Flowers, Flower Moon. What are you,
There's an echo in here.
Sorry,
killers, flower.
I got stuck on a needle.
Okay, so this is Napoleon. Me and Nadia reacted to the trailer. It's a big deal, this. It's a massive film. It's got Oscar potential around it, hasn't it? Because it's got Joaquin Phoenix starring. It's got Vanessa Kirby in there. It's curious in that third down the cast list is Tahar Rahim.
Yeah, they don't give him much to do.
He's not getting that much, is he? No. I mean, I would say that Rupert Everett is in there a little bit more, or is a little bit more impactful, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's a whole host of sort of British actors that sort of bubble around.
Underused that guy, what's his name?
Tahar
Rahim.
Yeah,
he's a great actor.
Yeah, he is. In interviews, I've seen Joaquin Phoenix go to great lengths to say, look, if you're going to the cinema to watch a historical document, this isn't it.
No.
Of course it isn't. And in fact, Dan Snow said it's not a documentary. I felt like saying, well, of course it isn't a fucking documentary.
Who said?
Dan Snow, the historian. He said, well, you know, I mean, they have got a few facts wrong. Like, he wasn't there for the guillotine of Marie Antoinette.
No, he wasn't.
And something else that he wasn't there for.
The French said that as well, because you know how picky they can be about their own heroes.
But what did Ridley Scott say to the French?
What did he say?
You don't even fucking like yourself, so you're not going to like the film. He's in combative mood.
He is, isn't he?
If you say anything wrong about Ridley Scott's films, he'll punch you.
Oh, okay.
He doesn't mind.
No, he doesn't.
I like him for that, but at the same time, I think people are a bit afraid to perhaps say to him, don't do it like this.
It probably must have been a long time coming, because nobody, as far as I know, has done Napoleon.
Well, Stanley Kubrick for many years wanted to, didn't he? And then there's talk.
He had
huge ambitions to make.
Oh, wow.
I think he had like copious notes, and he was fascinated and obsessed with the sort of the strategy and military.
It is a story. I mean, it's
a heck of a story. Yeah, exactly. But I think he was
came
much
from nothing, and he took over the world.
Well, did he come from nothing?
No, he didn't. That's a complete nonsense. But
as Joaquin Phoenix says, he says, well, you're coming to watch a Ridley Scott version. And I think that's a really important point, actually, to say at the front here, even though Joaquin Phoenix has said this. You're not seeing an accurate historical portrait. But the thing about it is it's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
I mean, you get all the battles. You get Austerlitz. Is that right? Austerlitz. You get Waterloo. You get Toulon.
It's a fictional film, for God's sake.
Yes.
What's wrong with people?
We don't know what he said
fiction
and how he said it, but apparently there were those letters, as you kept asking.
Oh, there were? Yeah, no. I know that's how we know what their relationship was like. Yeah.
The categorising librarian in you, Richard, said, do they exist? Who's taken them? Where are they? Have they been categorised?
I can tell you exactly what the
where would they be catalogued, Mum?
791.435.
No, you're joking, really?
That's film rather than
Napoleon,
history.
Napoleon's letters.
Yeah.
So the film starts in Revolution and Marie Antoinette. Whoa, I don't like the beginning.
I did. It's a horrible thing, guillotine.
Guillotines fascinate me.
Why doesn't it look so much? It looks so much worse than hanging, though.
And apparently, your head stays alive and sentient for seconds.
Only for seconds.
Well, it's long enough to be able to see your body.
How does anybody know that?
I mean, I guess some people, would, as their head rolled, would want to see if there was applause, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so it starts with that. We see Napoleon Bonaparte played by Joaquin Phoenix in the crowd. And that's historically inaccurate, but who gives a fuck? It was a great beginning. Maybe you didn't really need to put him there, but I really like that. I like the way they did the guillotine. I like the walkout.
Yeah, I'd read that he wasn't there in actual fact.
But what do you think of the scene?
But I liked it being there because it put the whole film historically gave me a view of him where he fitted in, which I thought was quite good.
It's always a bit of a risk, though. It's not a risk. It's just in fact, it's not a risk. It's not really anyone's fault. It's just that whenever you see Revolution in France, it always looks like Les Mis.
It always looks like Les Mis, and they're all marching towards the camera.
And they always stand in the street.
Yeah,
and they always have enormously cumbersome flags. It's like, why do you get a smaller one? Why do they have great big ones? Because, you know, they're always great, huge. Because they weren't thinking about cameras back then, were they?
Well, maybe they were.
Maybe they were. So this is really the story of Bonaparte, but it's not a cradle-to-grave story. This is picked up very much at this point where Marie Antoinette goes, so sort of revolution, through to his eventual exile to St. Helena, is it?
Yeah.
And within this narrative...
Via Elba.
Via Elba.
Because yeah. I always thought Elba was where he finished up.
I thought they said Elbow. So really, it's a film that kind of... its narrative moves along two parallel tracks. You've got his sort of ascent, and you have his military ambition, and you have his romance. Vanessa Kirby plays Josephine.
She does play Josephine.
Wasn't there a famous line where he says something along the lines of, with you, Josephine, it is never a quickie, it is always a longie?
Yeah, he's bound to have said just like that as well.
I don't think he has a longie. There's a lot made of his short stature and sort of very, very functional sex, which is quite shocking.
What's his mother calls it? Canines.
Like canines?
Canines.
Yeah, like dogs. What do you say, dogs?
I don't know. What's wrong with him? I don't know.
Commode. Come on.
There's an argument for whether it's a film about a relationship or a film about war.
Or there's an argument to say it's about both.
Yes, but which is the more powerful?
Okay, so as we sort of rumbled into this film and Nance kept squealing, Paul Rees! Paul Rees! I don't know. Go and check out our review of, what was it? Oh, Saltburn. Paul Rees!
He's given nothing to do in this.
All he does is stand in doorways.
No, he didn't in this.
He delivered some lines. He did deliver a few lines. Can I say, he's got a lovely face.
Confuse people now because they don't know who the hell
anyway,
he is.
Anyway, Paul Rees is one of the supporting actors. Let's talk about Joaquin Phoenix. So we're coming to this film really because it's a star vehicle. Right?
It is, but I'd rather approach it through Vanessa Kirby.
Let's do that, Mum. Should have been Jodie Comer.
Should it?
Yeah, she was originally cast.
Now that's interesting.
Because, of course, Ridley Scott worked with Jodie Comer on The Last Duel as well.
She was very good in that, wasn't she? Because she's given some absolutely drop-dead awful lines to say.
Right.
Like, look down, Napoleon. Once you see it, you'll never want to move away from it. I mean, you know, come on. Right. That is a bad line.
I've got a few thoughts on that.
But she's an independent woman. Mm-hmm. She lets him know from the beginning what she's like. No apology for her accent.
It should have been a loose woman.
Her accent.
Well, there's no apology for anyone's accent because no one speaks French in this film. No one's French. No one's Russian.
What's the word?
No apology for her actions. Actions. Yeah.
Which is pretty unusual.
She's a bit loose.
She's very loose.
She's a loose woman.
She's bisexual.
No, is she?
What did you think that scene was about where the woman was behind her and came up and she was licking her lips?
Oh my God, I completely missed that. I must have been busily eating my minstrels. I didn't get that at all. So she's quite a loose cannon. She's not lady of the night, but she's a lady of the light. I don't know what she is.
Didn't you think that in a way that I felt like the thing had been written down somewhere to say Napoleon was a great tactician and a great emperor and a great soldier, but in real life he was a positive, puling little baby.
Wow.
Don't you think?
That's what you said of me when I first came into the world.
And he wasn't a puling baby. Little baby, because he is.
Yes.
In his relationship with her, he's absolutely a child.
He is a child, but at the same time...
Without it affecting his... grand statistician moments or anything like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think what the film's very much trying to do is give us the sort of human behind the sort of veneer of the public image, that famous painting of him on a horse and all that. Yeah. Apparently that painting of him on a horse was, in history, he was on a mule.
No.
So that kind of great big thing was... So he was a big propagandist of his achievements and who he was.
Yeah.
And I think this was a film, you're absolutely right, which sought to sort of get under the skin of who he was and who he really was. And I think we both asked the same question of each other sort of quite near the beginning of, I wonder why there was, whilst I understand why Kubrick was drawn to it, I think Spielberg's doing a series about Napoleon as well. It wasn't that I can't see the reason to make a film, because you could ask that of anything. Why are you making a film of anything? Yeah. But as we were sort of like approaching the halfway point, and this is 2.5 hours long, I was sort of thinking, well, what is the point of this film? Because it wasn't really telling me anything I wouldn't have surmised about a tiny emperor. Or as they call him, as the Daily Star called Kim Jong Un this week.
Did you see the Daily Star called Kim Jong Un the tiny tyrant? Oh no!
So for a small, you know, there's small man syndrome and all that kind of stuff. So I was a bit disappointed, if I'm honest, that I wasn't getting anything other than what I would have predictably thought an emperor, a short emperor, would have been.
Stop calling him short.
Well, he was.
He was a puling child. But I mean, let's.
Okay, so what did you think of their romance?
Well, she was so much in control, so much in charge. And I suppose the whole point of that was to show that men, no matter how great they are in certain situations, can be controlled by a woman.
And you felt...
Especially if they look down.
Well, I mean, I do think that was a... I have to say, though, David Scarpa, who wrote the script, I have to say, I think this film does fall a little bit foul of what I felt Killers of the Flower Moon fell foul of, and something else we saw recently that was a major film.
No, something else
where the female characters were just not developed enough. I just felt it was really weak to have this great long film where the romance between the two of them is so key, and it's in the trailer, and she spreads her legs and says, you know, once you've looked down there, you're never going to want to look away again, fella. And and you sort of, it was committed.
Yeah.
As he kind of looked down, and I don't know, I felt that was cheap and shallow.
I don't, it's not a good line. And as somebody said, was it Mark Kermode? Even it took a great actress to say it and not
I mean, don't get me wrong,
visible.
It's just stunning. I mean, she could do that scene countless times for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I mean, but I got a bit sick of her, actually. But
did you?
Letting things drop off her shoulder and then look innocent in the back.
Simpering and all that
kind
of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But,
I mean, that whole thing of her having affairs and stuff like that, I think I really wanted to buy into his longing for her and his adoration
yeah,
of her.
I thought they did that okay, actually.
Well, I think the reason I didn't buy into the intensity of their romance as much as I was expecting to was actually because that scene where she spreads her legs and shows everything,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the narrative and the story arc really relies on that moment as the kind
yeah.
of ensnaring moment.
It's a bad line.
I thought we were going to get more of those moments like at the ball when she sort of said, who are you? I thought we were going to get a bit more wooing and wordplay and kind of,
yeah.
you know, all that kind of stuff. But he wasn't a man of many words, really, was he?
He wasn't really. And although we get to know quite quickly in the romantic bits that she rules his life, we never really know why.
No.
Unless there is something going on.
No, exactly.
On down
and you don't really, and in a weird way, I was getting similar vibes to what I got in Killers of the Flower Moon, which was, I thought Leonardo was great. Lily Gladstone, I thought she was good too, but I didn't believe their romance. And
no,
in this film,
did
I equally,
you?
For saying this was a romance that happened, I didn't believe this romance either.
I believe this one more, in fact, because they clearly had some sort of sex game going on.
Where
she called him a brute and a beast, and he, and you come from nothing, and blah, 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 blah.
Yes, you leant over at one point and said they're playing games. I thought, well, I mean, I had a girlfriend once who had claimed to have, her mother claimed to have Napoleon's chessboard.
And
I flicked his king and his rook.
Oh, whoa.
But I didn't see any games. I was thinking, what is she talking about? I thought, oh, role playing. Do you think when they were on the chaise longue?
It had to be, because I mean, otherwise it doesn't make any sense at all. It makes him seem like a complete fool. And
yeah.
I don't think he was a fool. I think he was willing to go along with whatever she threw at him because he was obsessed sexually and otherwise.
See, I didn't think it convinced me of his dependency on
yeah,
her.
Yeah, I do know what you mean, actually.
And then that being an interesting undercurrent beneath this man who was
yeah.
winning all these battles. And I didn't really get any sense of what she really felt for him because I didn't believe
no.
her, because from the get-go she's had an affair,
yeah.
which I'm sure this is true.
Well, loads of affairs.
Well,
there's
so many of it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, she's with a woman I didn't even notice. I mean, but but yeah, so I felt that was problematic. And so for me, the romantic side of the film didn't ignite in the way I think it could. And I think it could have done really easily. I think he's got the actors there.
Yeah.
I kept wanting it to get a little bit deeper and complicated
yeah.
and emotional.
Yeah, I mean, I do know what you mean, because, I mean, I know nothing about Napoleon at all, but the only thing I do know, and it is true, maybe it's a librarian in me, that there was this series of very famous letters that went between them after they were divorced, so
right.
I knew they didn't stay together.
Yeah.
But he relied on her totally, although he wasn't with her, to
yeah.
keep sending these
letters.
So
I think I could have done with... I suppose they're hampered, aren't they? Because on the one hand, history shows he was this amazing leader, battle
yeah.
man, emperor. He's, you know, what an emperor to fucking put the crown on your own head.
Yeah.
Doesn't need anyone else to do
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
You know, you've got all of that going on. So you've got him as this character, and then you want to show him. I thought this revisionist portrait was going to be one in which we really saw this sort of really, really sort of vulnerable.
Yeah.
And there was vulnerability, and he does play that, but I don't... But it was kind of vulnerability that was also rolled up with some really odd choices that he made. Didn't you think in his performance there were moments of laughter and silliness and stupidity and tempestuousness that
yeah.
wasn't really tyrannical, but it was kind of just a bit silly.
Yeah, a bit silly is right. I mean, like a silly boy, yeah.
Yeah, like a silly
boy. The thing
boy.
Is, but don't you think that in a way it's because he had such faith in his own power and performance
right.
and ability, which let's face it, he had every right to be, because up until the very end he was absolutely right.
I felt like by the time we got to the end of their relationship, formal relationship, and there was a very powerful divorce scene, I thought, where he went from being really tearful to then hitting her.
Yeah.
So, and that was kind of, and so you got a real sense there of his kind of oh my God, there's a sort of bipolar-esque kind of mania to this man. He can go blow hot and cold.
There were moments where he did that, which I thought were really good, and I was hoping we would get more of those. Yeah, it's a bit Jokerish, wasn't it, where he suddenly snapped, and you thought, oh my God, nobody knew what was going to happen. But there were few and far between.
Okay, well, and so that's the sort of romance, and the romance runs its course. And I wonder whether the new, you know, there's a director's cut that's landing on Apple TV, I think, this Christmas, which has got an extra 110 minutes in it. I mean, I wonder whether that's going to be about the relationship, because I felt like we didn't
get... Yeah, we didn't see it all.
We didn't see it all, and I felt that perhaps they might have given a bit more that we just didn't see. Let's go to, obviously, I mean, the thing that makes this film really, really, really quite enjoyable, quite an enjoyable watch, is the war, are the battles. And we can't not talk about the battles. Now, I thought his last film, The Last Duel, which got a bit stick, I thought actually The Last Duel was brilliantly acted and brilliantly shot. And, I thought all the battle stuff in that was great. So I was hoping for that, and I wasn't disappointed with this. Was it Toulon, the first battle?
And Austerlitz,
I thought was brilliant. And you could really feel that. I've seen someone somewhere called this a sort of this is the ultimate dad movie. You know, for sexist, but you know, this idea of, you know, men do like to go on about battles. We sort of almost forget the fact that humans are involved in them.
Yeah.
The strategy and all that kind of thing. But I really felt Scott enjoying himself in that Austerlitz sequence, which is essentially the sort of trap that is created whereby one of the armies, I can't remember, is it Prussians or whatever, they fall through the ice.
That was a really good scene.
And I really like...
not quite so much, but yeah, that was amazing.
I mean, that scene was sensational. I thought Waterloo was good. I thought Waterloo was good for different reasons, which we'll talk about in a minute. I mean, I thought that scene was
very
really...
brutal. I mean, that will affect some people. I mean, I know one could say, well, of course it was, they were battles.
Yeah.
But in the sense that people like me, I mean, I'm much more conversant with modern battle than, say, I mean, people march towards
their
deaths.
Well, you always think of World War One as a kind of the sort of cannon fodder.
Yeah.
This is cannon fodder too. I mean, you're walking into bullets.
Yeah, and I mean, they weren't backward at showing the dreadful things that happened to the horses.
Oh, great, my God. Or that moment in the first battle where Napoleon's horse's legs get blown out. Yeah. So it's quite visceral, actually.
It is quite visceral.
I like the strategy. I thought the first, from a strategic perspective, so for any kind of, you know, battle fans, I thought his siege of Toulon was the most inventive. Because they had to blow a hole, you jumped out of your skin in the wall.
Yeah.
Then they had to go in, go over the top. It's the English, wasn't it? Get on top of the ramparts, and then they would fire cannons that they'd brought in at the ships to sink the armada.
I know.
Or to sink the navy. I thought his kind of his clear aggravation at the navy. They've got boats. They think they're clever with boats.
You think you're clever because you've got boats.
We'll bring you onto the land. That's what I know, which I thought was interesting. What I liked about Austerlitz, and I thought he needed to do this a little bit more in the film, I thought... He went for a very definitive grade and colour and film palette, colour palette on that, which I thought was sensational, because at the point that you had, it was almost at one point, I don't know if you thought, when they were, the cannonballs were hitting the ice and the bodies and the horses were falling into the water, it was like an abstract painting.
It absolutely was, and the colour of the water and the blood.
Beautiful.
And the music. Yeah. It was really good music there. Like a bell tolling a bit.
Whereas the rest of the music, there were moments where it felt like someone was going to break into song.
Yeah.
It was odd. I have to say, the rest of the music was odd.
It was odd, but the music for that was absolutely, you know, true and the right.
Did you feel he did a good job of us? Did you get a real sense of the complex nature of him as a tactician? Yeah.
Yeah, in a way that I would never, because I'm a girl and all of that sort of stuff, I would never would have thought of that. But of course, you've got to know where all your troops are going before you send them there. I never even thought of that.
See, I agree.
And used to play battleships. So
I love all that sort of stuff. I agree, but it's interesting having read there was a piece somewhere that I read somewhere talking about, I think the New York Times was talking about how he was a self-promoter. He would exaggerate. He would propagandize. I mean, look at the war in Israel and in Gaza. It's all about propaganda. What's that great quote? The first casualty of war is truth.
Yeah.
And I think, what if this is a revisionist? And this is where my ultimate umbrage with the film, or difficulty with the film, develops. It's a revisionist portrait. I don't feel it's revisionist enough in any direction whatsoever.
No.
It doesn't tell me anything I haven't already assumed about him. And I think it could have been interesting for two things if they'd gone down two routes. One, to have really interrogated the emotional intensity, whichever way that flowed between him and her.
Yeah.
And your point that if they're playing sort of sexual games or what have you, that's interesting that he was, you know, he had that thrill of being controlled by a woman. And her. We could have, I think we could have then done with more of her idea of her power. I never really got a sense of her power.
It was only in her face. Well, it was actually.
It was in that scene.
Yeah, it was in that scene, yeah.
Of her legs open and her on the sofa going, oh, you like me being in control. But then it sort of vaporised really quickly.
Yeah, but there's no explanation for how much he gave in.
I agree. So I think it failed on that if that was the revisionist portrait. Yeah. And then as a revisionist portrait of him as a battles, you know, as a tactician and a leader and a general and a commander, I think it would have been a much more interesting film, not to have denied what he'd achieved, but to have dug into his self-promotion being the thing that he was about. That would have been really interesting, I think.
Yes, yeah.
And something I'd have thought an actor like Joaquin Phoenix could have sunk his teeth into.
Yeah.
What about Waterloo?
Yeah, well, that was sort of taken over by Rupert Everett, who was brilliant.
He was a great addition at that point.
And he came at the right moment really where we sort of had enough of the people we
brilliant,
were watching.
Brilliant, sneering British. I presume he played Wellington, right?
Yeah, he must have done.
He
must have done.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he was really good. And
I liked, but again, even in that, there were little details, which I think for real kind of, you know, for battle fans, is, you know, the way in which the infantry of the English would kind of go into a queue.
I love that.
Well, I know there are certain formations, but one always forgets them from school, and then you think, why would they? And, you know, they're shooting, and then they've got the bayonet, and it's like, how the horses get close. And
how would he film that, Mark?
Well, there'll have been a lot of CGI, but a lot, I mean, they did have a stuntman with a bunch of extras in that formation,
yeah.
So they had all those actors
it's
in there.
Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, Ridley Scott would have been like Napoleon at times.
Yeah,
off to fire. Russia. That was an odd moment when Moscow was set on fire, and he fired a cannon at the pyramids, which by all accounts he didn't.
I don't know what the point of that.
It was almost like he turned
all...
up in Egypt, and it was like badly green screened, and then he kicked a football at it, and then moved on.
It was almost like Carry On Camping or Carry On Egypt or whatever the Carry On film
was. It was a bit strange.
I don't believe.
I think there might be more of that, don't you? In I was expecting at one point I was getting all my kind of epics confused. I was expecting Cleopatra to turn up. At
yeah,
one point.
I mean, I quite like the bit which must have been in the same scene, wasn't it, when he got the mummy?
I like
looked
that.
At it.
But did you think it ended oddly?
Yes.
He touched it and it fell over.
Yes.
What was he
climbed down, sort of chastened.
I think they could have had a real moment though of him, one emperor looking at another.
I think when they were doing the edit afterwards, I think they made sure that every scene he was in and whoever he was talking to sort of overplayed this thing, not overplayed, but played the thing of him being a small boy at heart, where, you know, he would almost cry if things didn't go his way.
Right.
I mean, all the idea of Napoleon as a great leader, well, he wasn't that at all, was he?
No.
Not the Napoleon we saw.
No, he was a tiny tyrant. I could have done with a little bit more explanation of the sort of European politics. Would have been nice to understand, because in that final scene of Waterloo, I couldn't check my fucking history lessons to know who were the Prussians, why had they changed, why were the Russians not with him, why had the Austrians, I thought he'd kind of almost killed all the Austrians, I thought they were, you know, so I could have done with a little bit more orientation there. That would have been helpful. And of course, maybe another approach to his character, the revisionist portrait of him, could have been his relationship with his mum, which I also thought was kind of thrown away. It was Sinead Cusack, wasn't it, played his
mum. Oh, was that his mum?
Yeah, played his mum.
Oh, I thought she was just like a maid.
No, that was his mum.
Oh, it was his mum.
That was his mum. And I think that could have been interesting.
Well,
and there was that incredible... I see there were moments which were really good about the time where, you know, they can't... Vanessa Kirby, Josephine, can't deliver him a baby, you know, presumably because she's overage. And so his mother gets this other woman, a girl in for him to go to sleep with, to test.
Yes,
I want to know. Yeah, but they found out so quickly. I want to know what kind of bloody pregnancy tests were they using back then.
That was just the compression of time in films.
Oh, no, I realised that.
Yeah, no, no.
But I thought that was brutal.
It was.
And that would have been a neat... I think we could have really interrogated that, him being a little boy for his mum, and his mum driving this idea that he needs an heir. I thought there were many ways I felt it could have gone, which would have been really original.
Yeah, they could have done that, but I felt... Vanessa was doing that on her own, really.
Yeah.
I mean, he couldn't be any more of a puling, puking boy.
True.
Otherwise, he wouldn't be Napoleon.
Okay, well, let's sum it up and give it a score.
Well, it's long. I wasn't bored for a minute, actually.
I wasn't, weirdly, a little bit like Killers of the... I wasn't bored. I mean,
no,
it shows
I
you... I think they're him and Scorsese and filmmakers like this have got such skill at just being able to keep things going.
Yeah,
I think.
And they know exactly when to pull back for shots and when to go in. I thought the sort of building, in terms of all the different battles, and they could become sort of very... much like each other, but he made that one the central one, didn't he, where they go through the ice. I mean, that was remarkable.
Yeah, it was.
And it deserved any attention that gets, because I mean, that was shocking, really shocking, and well filmed.
Yeah,
well,
it really was,
well done.
But did it tell you anything you didn't know?
I didn't know anything, so
respect. All right, fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking if I wanted to make a film about Napoleon, that I don't, but I didn't, I don't. I would want to make it from a really different angle, not from the obvious angle of all the wars, which, let's face it, if there's going to be a film to make, this is probably your best wars, Napoleonic.
Yeah, which in a way was why I liked the Killers movie, the Scorsese one, so much, because nobody's heard of that.
Yeah.
Nobody knows whether it was real or not, and
exactly.
He took that on, didn't
genuinely
he?
Genuinely new territory.
It was basically a story of a relationship between a very strong-willed woman and a very weak man in every respect, except when he's on the back of a horse fighting people.
Even though he has those asthma attacks and he's worried and scared, I don't like that detail.
Yeah.
Could have done with a bit more of him being nervous. He was nervy.
He was very nervy, and he makes that weird noise with his mouth and his
wheezy sound.
But not just... That's when he thinks of her.
Oh, what about the moment where he went, mum, 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 mum,
mum? I know, that's what I mean. Maybe it's his mother
complex. You see, they could have gone there. Weird.
We wouldn't have had a war film at this rate.
That's true.
I must admit, it made me think, and I said this to Mark while we were watching it, they must be, it made me realise the true insanity of all film directors, because to have put that together at 86, I cannot imagine.
85.
I mean, just extraordinary. I mean, he deserves something. So, I liked Joaquin, I like him in everything. I thought he looked the part.
You don't think he's becoming a bit typecast? Going back to my dyspeptic word.
He was dyspeptic.
He was dyspeptic. He had lots of indigestion, actually.
Yeah, a bit, Mark.
I think he needs to do something that's very different.
I tell you what I was having a problem with until about halfway through was, and I was going to say this to you, but then they sort of resolved it, was he's such, to me, a contemporary actor that the fact that he was playing, a historical figure, and I didn't feel a historical figure would have said any of the things that he was saying, and he was playing it as a modern figure in a way with his language, wasn't he? But I think, if anything, that was a fault of the script. It seemed like all his surrounding actors, like at the British court, the French courts, all looked like they were regulars in court drama and could say the words.
Yeah, no one else was coming off, period.
Exactly.
If that's kind of what you could describe him as
doing.
It
was like having Shakespeare with the sort of leading figure in a completely different
time.
It
was a really experimental Hamlet at the centre of
really
conventional Shakespeare.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think Joaquin Phoenix was making those choices, and I think the film kept wanting to straightjacket him back in.
Yeah, as it went on and on and on, I got sort of more used to that and stopped thinking that. But yeah, I thought she was great.
Although you had enough of her by the end.
I had enough of her, yeah.
She wasn't given a lot to do again.
She
wasn't really written, you know?
I really wanted her to chuck the baby in the river, but she didn't do that, but never mind.
Right, yes. That was an odd moment, wasn't it?
It was, especially as we couldn't really work out why...
See, I felt they could have been a bit more given to that moment, where we could have been... When I say given to a moment like that, like, I literally, from a sort of purely blocking out and shooting the scene context, I mean, a few more close-ups of him, a few more close-ups of her, for us to sort of imbue them with what were the thoughts there? Was he wanting to hurt her a bit? Was he wanting to show that it was her, that she'd let him down? What was she feeling? Resentment? We could have had all those moments, and it didn't give us the time to have all those thoughts.
No, it didn't.
And it was rich. It was pregnant, literally, with the opportunity to do that.
It's true.
I actually should have used me as a second unit.
He should. How many unit directors would they have or something like that? 100?
Oh, front me hundreds for those battle scenes. Yeah.
Anyway, so...
Score?
58.
Wow, okay, 58. Mm. Okay. Well, I think I've shared enough, you know, which way I think it could have gone to have been a really inventive and different film. I found him curiously... I found him really difficult to watch and listen to at the beginning. I found it awkward. I found him lumpy. I found it just weird. And as the film went along, I got more and more comfortable with him and enjoyed whatever weird choices he was making more and more. I liked the moments when he went, mum, 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 and all that. I was like, oh, wow, I wouldn't have expected that in a sort of historical epic. I really felt that they could have given Vanessa Kirby so much more. Mm. And Josephine, she's such a big character.
Yeah.
You know, she's got to be a big character to come together with this man. And the fact that they split up and that he still kind of has this kind of longing for... I just felt they missed a few tricks there. I felt that, and that was dependent on the script writing having an understanding of that. I think it needed more dark romance in there.
Yeah.
Which the dark romance would have really, you know, complemented, I think, the darkness of the battle scenes and all that. I thought the battle scenes were amazing to watch, amazingly executed, brilliant, just, you know, sensational sort of, you know, battle artistry on the big screen, have to be seen on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't expect anything else
from
Ridley Scott. And I think a really neat kind of reference at the end there to the sheer number of lives lost in all of his wars.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, half a million on his Russian offensive, and in total, 2 million across a 10-year period, and 48,000 in a day in Waterloo. I mean, you're dealing with vast numbers if you think of what we're horrified by at the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
So, for all of that, I think I'm in the same place as you. I think I might give it 60.
Oh, okay.
So around the same. Yeah, around the same, 60.
Go and see it, Serbs, and tell us what you think.
Yeah, please do tell us what you think. Are you a big fan of Joaquin Phoenix, Vanessa Kirby? Has Ridley Scott bitten off more than he can chew? Or has he got a hole in one?
Tell us everything.